last lecture?
I did. I forgot to put it up, so I'll put that up.
But you don't need that for the final.
Yes?
How does the session secret work?
The session secret.
What does that do?
Okay, so let's go to the... So where is the session secret is specified on which line, do you remember? Oh yeah, you're probably... You're
sure.
I'm a secret.
I just saw it.
There's a string called I'm a secret.
There it is. Right there. So what is this? So this is saying app use express session. So this is the code that's used for setting up sessions in Express. This is one way of doing it. And as part of it, you're specifying for the cookie... You're specifying for the cookie that its maximum age should be this much, so that's a parameter for it. So your logins will time out after 20 minutes, and then you specify secret, and then you specify where to store it. So the secret part is very important whenever you do any sort of session cookies, and this is because you have to think of the attack model. What is an attacker going to want to do? They're going to want to steal session cookies, ideally, or guess them. If I want to break into your session and pretend I'm logged in as someone else, if I can construct the right cookie, I could just put it into my browser and just access it. So this secret, so the way the technology behind doing this is hashing. You look up cryptographic hashes and how they work and stuff, but basically they're a thing that take something that you can read into this fixed-length random mess in a way that you can't reverse it. So the attacker having the hash, they can't go backwards. But if they can guess what was hashed, they can verify it by checking against the hash. So the attacker has most of the information that's being sent to the server because they have the browser state and other things and stuff. So you need some bit of information, typically, to make sure the cookies for your app are different from the cookies for any other Express app. And so you stick a little bit of salt in there, sugar or whatever. But it's basically a little secret that is app-specific. So you should, if the attacker can guess this, they can potentially reverse engineer your session cookies. And thus break into your session. So this secret does matter. Now the one thing is that secret only has to be as constant as you want your cookies to last. So for example, you could randomly generate that secret every time your app restarts. But that means that any session cookies when your app your system is rebooted or something would be invalid and everyone would have to log in again. It just has to stay constant for as long as you want your session to be valid.
So, if the only viable attack against this is known plain text, wouldn't, and every single example I've seen uses the word secret in the secret, wouldn't...
Yes, you should not do that. It should be something else.
Wouldn't picking anything out, literally any other word...
Than secret, yes.
Okay.
It's just like your password should not have the word password in it.
Because I'm looking at this and I'm like, known plain text.
No, but the whole point is it's an example. It's supposed to not be.
I'm a walrus.
Yeah.
That's true. But
you were
not
playing extent. Are you storing this in your database?
Uh-huh.
How is this any better than just picking a random number and you know where you go?
The idea is that it has to be, for example, let's say you allow long-term cookies that were good for, say, a month. And let's say your server rebooted. All those cookies are now invalid. You randomly generate it. It's only good for your uptime. Or you might need so if you store it in your database.
Isn't that what store is doing?
Mm-hmm. No. Store is storing the sessions. So you remember
it
those.
Needs to have a key to store them.
Yeah. I think that if I look at this, I'm not sure exactly if it needs the secret every time you compute it. I think it may. I'd have to look to see how it's stored, but normally if you change the secret, your cookies are gone. You essentially are resetting the cookies on the server side. So, in general, it just depends on the lifetime of your cookies. Like for this, since it's a 20-minute cookie, if this was randomly generated every time the app's restarted,
that'd be fine. This only becomes more of an issue is if you want cookies to be persistent for some longer period of time. And then if you figure it out, then you can potentially reverse engineer that. So, does that...
So, it's I mean, you're doing this... You're trying to keep a secret from the attacker, because why can't they generate the sessions cookies that you have? So this is getting off into security land. So I can kind of go on with this for a while, but the basic thing is when you create your app, the attacker should not be able to figure out what your secret is. It should really be a secret. And if possible, it should be an ephemeral secret, so it changes frequently. Now, if you wanted your cookies to last a year or something, then maybe every January 1st you regenerate the secret. But that means any sessions from logged in from the previous year would then all of a sudden go bad. So
every 10 years.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Now, so in terms of level difficulty, so the one talking about the exports and stuff, I would definitely ask that. One asking about the importance of the secret, I would not ask that. For the simple reason that I have not explained hash functions. I have not explained that. This is a bit of magic that's in the code that's part of the API. I'm not expecting you to know that. I'm not expecting you to have memorized the exact thing of this. Now, what could I ask about this routine?
Just this
wrong.
You could just give us what an ask and what's missing.
I could ask what's missing. That's a little bit harsh because you have to do that. Now, what I could ask is, like, for example, I can get rid of the comments here.
I was about to say, you could ask how long it's going to last.
Yeah. I could ask, you know, max age. I could say, okay, given this, I could say, what's the duration of, what happens, you know, when the, how long do sessions last with this?
No, it's in milliseconds.
In milliseconds.
I hate that it's stored in milliseconds. It makes sense, but it makes the calculation slightly more cumbersome.
I feel like it doesn't make sense. Why would you need sub-second precision on the way?
It's just because the units of time are measured in milliseconds.
Yes.
It's a counter.
Like,
no, not really. No. And this is also a key thing of APIs. Like, why would you ever want a cookie with less than a second in duration? I mean, you wouldn't. But the fact
or
is, your application potentially keeps time in this. So, think about this whenever you're designing an API. What do you export to the programmer? Are you exporting something that's sane?
I want nanosecond precision.
Yes?
So we shouldn't be expected to have to write out full functions or anything. It's just maybe one line to fill in something.
Exactly. What I'm looking for is either you most had to fill in a line or fill in an identifier or something like that, or more explain, you know, answer questions of, like what would be more reasonable is saying that I write this, I give you this code, like I give you some fragment of this, and I say the cookies for this application never expire.
True or false?
Will they ever expire? Yeah, it's like that should be false.
If you don't define the cookie age, does it default to unlimited or does it default to a time frame?
I think it defaults to session. No, it has a time. But
it has
a
time limit. It's 100 days or something. I think you can have it.
Yeah. You set it to zero or false.
No, but it's not unlimited. It turns out there's always a time limit for cookies. It just may be decades in the future.
Oh, okay.
I thought the limit was like a month.
No. Google sets cookies to like 2030 or something.
Is that respected?
I don't know. I'm pretty sure that I know that cookies can be. It varies on the web browser.
Yeah.
That's the problem, yeah. But I know Google tries to set, essentially, cookies that last forever. But again, I'm looking at, you know, what does this do? Or I'd say, what's the name of, what's the name of the database where, you know, what is the name of the collection, you know, that Mongo is using to store session information? Sessions!
Although
huh?
The fact that it's named DB
Right, but no, but see, the whole thing is, what is the name of the MongoDB? It's like, the DB name is only in the context of your node application. It has no meaning to MongoDB.
Yes.
So I would look for the name sessions, because that's the name of collection there.
All of this stuff in the you have posted on the wiki is server side.
Yes.
No client side examples. Is that indicative of where the focus is going to be? Or?
Well, the fact is that we did have some client side code, but most of that was covered through the midterm.
Okay.
Like we had that.
Yes.
So a variant of like stuff on the midterm could be there, but at this point I'm more concerned. I did some stuff on the client side, but we haven't spent a lot of time talking about client side stuff. We spent much more time on server side, so I feel like I should more ask you server side stuff.
Okay.
And frankly, all of you had to learn some server side stuff to get your thing working. How much client side you did, it completely depends upon your application. You could have done some very bare minimum jQuery stuff, or you could be writing, you know, and really fancy stuff on your server. So on your client side, so. But you had to do basic stuff on the client on the server side, so. That's what I feel more comfortable focusing on.
I guess for a question you could ask more of a core concept, like what is a prototype, or is that too basic, do you think?
I wouldn't want to grade what is a prototype. Unless I did it as like a multiple choice question. But that is a reasonable question. You know, what is the difference when we say prototype? If I'm talking about prototype-based objects versus class-based objects, I could do an advantage-disadvantage kind of thing.
You'd rather marry that.
You know, but that as a multiple choice.
As a multiple choice.
Yeah, or something like that. But what
are you putting multiple?
What I might be able to say, what I might be able to say is what kind of objects does JavaScript support? Does it support class-based or, you know, prototype-based? But I don't like those sort of questions because it's just plain terminology as opposed to conceptual understanding. What I'd rather say is you'd show an object and then say what... Like for example, what I could ask is... So, it's expressed up. Give a list of four methods of the express object. Fav icon, logger, body parser, method override. You know, I mean, you see what I'm saying is like I could ask you something about you know an object in there that's actually defined in the code. The answer is right there. You just have to read it off. You have to memorize.
A couple questions like that.
Yeah.
To the point where it was deceptively easy and it threw me off.
Yeah. Expect questions that are not. I'm not trying to make really tricky questions. If you get an interpretation of the question that's really tricky,
you're doing it wrong.
You're probably doing it wrong. The only time that's not the case is if I ask you to explain like how this. No, I don't think I'm not going to ask anything like that. I didn't ask like anything like that in the midterm. So.
So interpret questions as literally as possible.
Go for the simpler thing. If you're looking, if it comes up with some really crazy complicated answer, you're probably overthinking it. Because what I fundamentally want to test is, can you read this code in a basic sense? And do you kind of know what's going on behind the code? I don't, not a really complex mental model, but a basic mental model. Mm-hmm.
Are the snippets here exactly the code that's going to be on the final, or are
this plus the midterm?
Right, okay.
So the midterm code was the, there was two particular bits of code that was on the midterm that I gave simplified versions.
Yeah.
So the expanded version of those could show up, but basically the code from the midterm plus this. Because I'm trying to... So if you understand these things, you're in good shape. If you understand the stuff in the midterm, you're in good shape. And for most of you who have... If you've actually sat down and built a Node app and tried to get it working, this should be easy. This should not be hard because you actually had to figure out what all the stuff did. Okay. Yes.
Hey,
yeah.
More for conceptual stuff regarding JavaScript.
Mm-hmm.
Like just to go back to the book.
Mm-hmm.
I would say the first 5 chapters, I don't think we went beyond
right,
that.
Yeah, exactly. First 5 chapters of JavaScript, the good parts. The learning Node book, I think, would have, if you didn't look at it, I mean, that if you're still having trouble understanding what Node is doing and how it fits together, just get the Node book by, I think, Shelley Powers that I pointed you out earlier. Just go get that and just read it. It'll probably just make everything fit together if you haven't looked at it already. Because
stop the main details. Yes?
In terms of the Jade stuff, are we looking in terms of like level of difficulty of questions, like what does block content do for us, or
like what I want to know is
how much theirs
is. Like exactly what I want to look at is
implement Facebook using Jade.
No, for example, block content. No, what's when I say extends layout? I'd say what does extends layout transform into when this is instantiated?
Line
1
through 10 of section
C2. Yeah, or like basically, what's the relationship between C2 and C3?
Well, 1 through 9.
Right. So basically, so what happens is when you say extends layout, what really happens is this block content here gets substituted in here. Right? When you say extends layout, it means it takes this as the prototype and then instantiates things inside of it. And the only thing you've decided here is block content. And so block content is here. So this is what I was saying. If you understand this code, you understand what's going on. And if you don't understand parts of this, you don't understand what's going on in some way. And you should debug. And it might have made your life a lot easier earlier. But it's all about asking the right questions. So for example, what I could ask is, what part of the document, what part of the HTML document does this line produce? Or I could say, what if I gave you a copy of the HTML that came from the parse thing where I had the source thing? What line from the source files generated that? So like you look at the source in the HTML header of the page, which has libs, jQuery, jmin, and stuff. If I show that raw HTML, you should be able to say, oh yeah, it's this line in Jade. Which again should be really simple because the path names will be the same. So, using literal interpretations will potentially get you far. But you notice that it's... I'm looking for other people questions, but I will take yours. Yeah, I'll take that one then.
To what extent should we expect you to probe on the Mongo specific stuff?
So, I specifically have included the article provider MongoDB. So I do want to ask some things about MongoDB. And in particular, what I'm looking at is just, what's this? Push. So what is push? What's that? What is this dollar push thing in there? So let's look in context here. It says, this is article provider prototype add comment to article. So this is one that this code wasn't actually used in the, in the one we did have. This was dead code in the version we had because we didn't have comments fully implemented unless you extended it. Unless you went through the whole tutorial. But what I can tell you here is this push, who interprets this push?
MongoDB.
Yeah, MongoDB. This is not, so it's, you're sending a string to it, push, and the push action is basically saying, add it to the collection, add it on top. You basically add a list.
Does it add it directly to the comments? Like, I assume that's an array?
Basically, yeah, exactly. So you're saying push, and then you're saying comments. So what it means is it's not erasing the old comments that were there. It's adding it onto it. Because otherwise, you wouldn't be adding the comment. You'd be blowing away. So You know push and pop from stacks, right? Data structures. When you see the word push or pop in a program, you should have a basic idea what it does. Yes?
So, is that Mongo or Mongoose?
That's MongoDB.
This is MongoDB. So, Mongoose... So, what is the difference between Mongoose and MongoDB? Mongoose is just a wrapper. And the main thing that Mongoose gives you is a schema. The idea is that I don't want... with MongoDB, it's schemaless. You just have documents. The documents can have, basically are collections of objects. Each of the documents are really like JavaScript objects, and you've got a name and a value. And which keys and which values each document has depends. But when you use Mongoose, you say, every document looks like this. It has this structure. And even if you don't define something, it will make sure to do that. So what's the biggest benefit of this? Keeping you out of trouble. To make sure that whenever you instantiate a document, it has all the fields that you want. All the keys. Code's also simpler, yes. That's the other benefit. So it makes it a bit more relational database-like. Yes? A Mongoose schema in JSON. That's a good question. A Mongoose schema would be like saying for a JSON object, it's all the keys, all the object properties, as opposed to none of the object values. But in JSON, again, JSON does not, objects in JavaScript do not have fixed attributes. Every possible, I'm using attributes, properties, it's all kind of the same thing. An object in JavaScript, you can ask the any arbitrary property of it. And if it's a property that's not defined, it'll come back as undefined. Same basic thing with MongoDB. It'll tell you if something's undefined. But you would say that MongoDB is designed to store JSON-like objects. It's a little bit more than JSON because it has more flexible types than strict JSON. When you use Mongoose, you're saying that each JSON object will have these properties. Always. Yes?
What exactly is a prototype?
What is a prototype? So, let's expand that. What's the difference between an object class and an object prototype? That's essentially it, yes. Another way of thinking of it is you have a prototype. If you have a prototype-based system, you access, that's an object. You can do anything you want with it. When you have a class doesn't exist. It doesn't take up any storage. You can't assign values to it. It's just, it's a definition of something that you have to instantiate as an object. So, where do prototypes come into play in JavaScript? It's really about inheritance. Right? I want to be able to say this object gets something from a parent. How do I specify parent-child relationships? Basically, I'm specifying, instead of doing that, I specify prototypes. Now, I asked some simple questions about this on the midterm. I'm not going to go into huge amounts of detail on this in the final, simply because when we've gone over to some degree, if you didn't really understand the stuff, it makes your life difficult in coding. But more what I'm going to look at is practical things. Like, for example, I could say something like, let's go over here. Actually, I'll go up here. It's a little more simpler. So when I say app.post. App is an instance of what kind of object?
Express.
It's express. But what if I... So if I tell you that express does not define the post property, then who does?
Hopefully the user.
No, no. Well, the idea is a prototype associated with the app,
okay.
with the express object. One of its prototypes is what? Connect.
Connect. Okay.
Well, I take that back. I would have to look at how it's actually implemented. I suspect it's either as a prototype relationship or it's manually assigned to the express object. I'm not sure which. It's hard to tell, actually, from a runtime point of view. But it'd be easier to show a little code fragment with that. But see, again, these prototype kind of relationships, you don't see... You see them implicitly all over the place, but not explicitly. So, what I'm more interested in is things like functions as... Oh, like, for example, here... What is the type of this?
It's a type
object.
It's an object. This is a bit of a trick because JavaScript does not really have many types.
There are only two.
There's numbers. There's numbers. There's Boolean values. There's strings. Objects.
Regular
functions.
Regular expressions.
Regular expressions.
And there's not a number.
Oh, yeah.
Which is, not a number is part of number.
Except.
Yeah.
It's the rule that proves the exception.
Right. But you see what I'm saying is that there are not many types here. This is an object. So if I ask, what's the type of this? It's an object. Or I would ask... Or let's say here, express session takes an object as a express sessions, you know, API takes.
That's not the end of the object. That's the end of a nested object.
Oh, thank you. You're right. It goes down to here. So express session takes an object as a parameter. What are its properties? List the, what properties does it have? Yeah, so the properties are, and what is the type of each of them? So it takes a cookie, which is an object. It takes a secret, which is a string. It takes a store, which is an object, I think. No. Yeah, it's because it's a new. So news return objects. And that's it. So, because remember, I had those questions on the midterm where I was asking about this. Well, not this one. Remember these lines? So one thing that really bugged me on the midterm was you all did not seem to pay attention to the difference between invocation and definition, which is problematic. When you call this function here, when this line gets called, how many function invocations are there? Well, let's do it here. How many function invocations are there here when I call app post?
One.
Zero. Right? Well, I'm saying, in the arguments. Your app post, this is a function invocation right here.
Yeah.
This is a string, and this is a function definition. Right? This function, anything that's done in here is not executed now. When will it be executed?
Later.
Whenever someone asks for the logout page. It's going to get executed.
No other time is it going to get executed. So all of this code in here is not evaluated until that point. It doesn't matter if I assign values or whatever, that's deferred. Just like whenever you define a function, that doesn't mean any of the code runs in it. That goes the same for inline functions. It's a function like any other. Yes?
So, yes, we're supposed to, I know the difference in terms of but in terms of how Express defines them, that would only be triggered on a post request for Slack logout?
Yep. If you wanted to be triggered on all of them, what would I have called instead? I would have called app.all. We had looked this up. If you want to say it for the same code, should be called for a get, a post, or a put, or you know, you say all. Code be this messy? It looks better if it's a smaller font. It fits on the page. The fact that I've blown up the font and MediaWiki style sheet doesn't deal with it. So, like, for example, if I just do... It looks fine. But let's make it bigger, okay? It's going to be in LaTeX. It'll look beautiful.
A little bit colorful. Because I like colors.
But if you look at it on your own, you know, desktop, it should look fine. Yes?
I'm having some trouble with callbacks. Could you run through some functions with like callbacks in the branches? Like,
we just did.
Yeah.
This right here is a callback.
Yeah, when it's just said it's just a callback, it's in the parameter without braces, and then it's later inside the braces, it just says callback.
Okay. So that's different. When if you see a function that has a parameter
it's
callback,
the,
okay, so let's okay that's great. So you see this function ID callback. That means that whoever called this function gave it a callback. It's expecting someone else to have passed in a function. And the idea is that here in this function, it's going to do some work. And then when it's done, it calls the callback. You notice, what are the two ending things? So if error, do the callback with the error. Else, do this, and then call back the error this way or call it. So you notice, all of the chains of code in this function end with the callback, which is the way it should be with a callback. When the function terminates, you call the callback by whatever path, and you give it the appropriate arguments depending on it. If you don't call a callback, you should have a really good reason, because it's the whole reason. The callback is to tell the rest of the application that this function is run and some state has been changed.
The callback is kind of like the return keyword.
Yes, it's kind of, basically in Node, you instead of doing a return, exactly, because otherwise, when this function returns, what does it go back to? It goes back to the event loop. There is no other state remaining. The callback is what enables your application to continue things on. Does that...
So it'll run the callback, and then at the same time, it'll go back to the...
So the central loop of your program is this event loop. The event loop... When does that event loop really start? It's kind of running always, but you really, when you end this create server line at the end of app.js, it falls off, and then it's done, and then now it's just waiting for events. And the events that have been defined are basically with this app post, app get, or something, you specify conditions under which certain functions should be called. The event loop now checks those conditions. Basically, you've defined an event. The event here is when the login URL is requested. When that event happens, call this code.
So why does that have to be the callback? It's only going to be called whenever something
gets logged in. So why is this defined as a callback right here?
Yeah.
Because what I'm doing right here is I'm saying in the event of this event, call this function. I could have this function defined as a name elsewhere. I could have said handle post and defined a function and then just say handle post here. Instead, I'm defining it inline. Purely a style thing. Does that help? This callback thing is very important. Yes?
So, in the article provider find by ID,
mm-hmm.
you handle the error by saying if error, callback error, else do the work. Could we also say if error and then in a block say callback error return?
Wait, so you just want to change this right here? Oh, there's no braces here. You're worried about the lack of braces here?
So I'm saying, like, if we explicitly call return after calling the callback.
Call return after the callback, you mean?
Yeah. Is that, like, and
that's fine. Yeah, it's the same thing, basically. But the idea is that after you call the callback, you shouldn't be doing anything else.
So it's just that style.
The callback you should think of as the last thing you do. In effect, you're passing control over to the callback under most circumstances. Syntactically, you can do something afterwards, but most of the time you shouldn't.
Should it have semicolons there?
It doesn't need them, but technically
yeah.
Should
have a lot of JavaScript's a little flexible on that semicolon thing. Yes?
So just to clarify, this is a post that Express gives you handle
from callback. Yes. That is, whenever you define... when you define the post, you're saying it wants a function to call when the logout post form comes. It will be called when that happens. Otherwise, it may never be called. Notice, when does a node application terminate? It doesn't. It's an infinite loop. I mean, I think there's probably some way of getting it to shut down, but in general, it doesn't. It's designed to run forever. It's a web server.
You could tell it to kill itself.
Yeah.
Yeah, you could. Yeah, but I'm seeing, but it's not a... You could give it a skeleton. Yes?
So, for the callback here, you don't actually have to do it, but pass it. The callback keyword just says the callback.
The callback is not a keyword. This is just an identifier. I could have called it
potato.
Daisy. And it would work just as well.
Or this is a function to which I should return control.
Whenever you see callback, this is a function to which I should return control. That's a great identifier, except it's a little long.
Then you'll never have to write comments.
I mean, it's just an identifier. There are relatively few keywords. So remember, this is right here. This is the parameters to the function. This function takes two parameters. One, the first parameter we are calling ID. The second parameter we're calling callback. Because this is JavaScript, there is no type checking on this. So this could refer to anything, and this could refer to anything. But we're going to act as if it's a function. Because if it's not a function, we're just going to be unhappy for this one. An ID we're going to treat as basically a string of some kind.
If callback isn't a function, we will crash.
Actually, in this case...
Yeah. Sorry, yes is in fact...
Just related to this, if you have code, I know we're not supposed to do this, but if you have code after the callback, it's still false, like it will pass the...
After the callback.
Yeah, after the callback terminates, it's a regular function, it will return it,
and
it will do
this.
Yes. But what you should be, every time you see a function being defined, you're seeing code that's going to be run later. That's normally when you define a function, that code is going to be run later. When it gets run is when you call it. The weird thing about this code is this is a function which you never call. There is no explicit way to call it. And in fact, it would be very hard to call it because you didn't even give it a name.
Has no first.
The only name it has is the name of the parameter that it's associated with. This one right here has a name. The name of this function is prototype find by ID. But I'm saying with the callback is a function. Like if we go up here, let's just be clear. Like here, this right here, this function has no name. This is an anonymous function. The only name it has is in the app post method. It had parameters. And one of its parameters was named something. We don't know what it called it. It may have called it Daisy. It may have called it, silly callback. I don't know. Yes.
So, could you call callback return, actually? Or is that a keyword?
Wait. Could you call callback return?
No.
The name?
A reserved word.
There are a good number of reserved words in JavaScript. If you look at the things, but I'm sure return is. The weird thing about the reserved words in JavaScript is they're not just JavaScript reserved words. I mean, a lot of the reserved words have no meaning in JavaScript. They're reserved because they might be in other things that JavaScript's embedded in and stuff. So there's this whole, if you look at the list of reserved words, you go like, what does that mean in JavaScript? It means nothing. It's just reserved. I mean, it's reserved in the literal sense of don't use it.
So
this is a parking spot you cannot have.
They could, like,
no one's going to park there, but you can't park there either.
You might be able to clobber some of them.
So they could use it as like censoring.
Yeah, normally reserved words you can't do anything with.
So like if they didn't.
If it's a reserved word, not, as opposed to a predefined identifier. Predefined identifiers you can override. Reserved words you can't do anything with. That's kind of the definition of a reserved word. Should be, yeah. Of course, some interpreters might implement reserve words as identifiers, and then it's all, yeah. Yes, go ahead. Yeah.
I saw get method with three parameters as opposed to just two.
So get is a little. So I don't know if you all have noticed this. I kind of glossed over this, but get is a funny beast because it has multiple semantic meanings. You know why? Because in one sense, it's get as in a HTTP get request. The other sense of get as in get the property of an object.
Yeah, that's dumb.
And they both work. And the way you tell the difference between them is how many parameters you have with them. I'm trying to get with three parameters? And normally it's one or two. Like this.
No, that's just the callback.
The callback function has three. Get has two.
Hmm?
Oh, you're right, that is.
No. Wait, no. Make sure you match up the braces there.
Yep, I think that, well, that's,
yeah, it
is. Yes, it is.
Oh, yeah.
All right, because, yeah, okay, oh, this, no, this is right.
That's middleware stuff.
No, this is right, yeah, because this is the URL, this is the callback function, and then this is the,
Also callback. You can give as many parameters as you want, and they'll be called sequentially, I believe. Or you could also give them as a list, an array.
Right, and then they're called. Because what it's doing here is this in between, and this is the one that actually gives the response back.
Well, it'll respond if it's not logged in.
Right. But, well, you notice this one does a redirect. So this little bit of code gets called and basically does a redirect to slash if you're not logged in, and then...
Next,
otherwise,
next, we'll pass
next,
it to the
next goes at the end.
Thing that was given, so if you can
right.
Chain them all together.
Middleware! So if it was redirected, would user.list still be called?
No, because
no.
It redirected to the list.
And that's the point of the redirect.
Right.
So what's the point of this redirect? It's saying that, I mean, look at the logic of this, then you can understand the syntax. The logic of this is saying that, okay, this is getting slash user. So this, if you're not in, if you're not logged in, if request slash username, then just jump here. Okay, we've got something here. But if you're not there, then you're not logged in. There doesn't exist a session. So then redirect to slash, which will give you an opportunity to log in. It's a little bit simple because it's such a simple web app. But yes.
Is there going to be any jQuery?
A bit.
Oh.
But from the midterm kind of level. So I want you to understand a little bit about jQuery UI.
But I would rather have you try to go through this more specifically as opposed to trying to go broad and just try to like read everything in sight. I'd rather you say, do I understand what this code is doing? And like, if you want to study for this, sit down with your friends and kind of get around and go like, what's that line doing? Because really reading code like this, you think you understand, you go like, whoa, wait, what's that right there? Yes?
I'd like to go a little bit, tiny bit into detail about where you want to get and where you want to be post. Like,
I
had trouble finding like concrete like reasoning for you.
So the differences between the different HTTP commands is really by convention. It's your server ascribes whatever meaning it wants to the request, and the requests essentially have the same syntax. It's what the browser expects, and it's what the server expects. In general, gets are for getting information, posts are for changing the state of the server. There's also two other ones that are used also for put and. There's two other ones, put and. I could look it up, but I didn't talk about those because those are less common and like RESTful APIs and stuff. But
the blatant differences for GET will display the stuff in the URL, POST will not. So if you're passing parameters with a GET, it'll actually come back with a URL that has a question mark and the stuff behind it.
Oh, right. If you put the question mark stuff stays in the URL. And the post stuff, it will just go be hidden. But it's actually still the same thing through the server side.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But that's just how the browser parses it. So, yeah, that's actually right. That's it.
So you could use, like, the same get for everything or post for everything. It's just how it kind of works out. So
yeah. Basically, you want to use get for everything unless you're explicitly sending information to the server. The user is input. You use post for user input.
So, like, in this example, right, you're registering, so they're okay.
You're saying their username and password to it. But it really is by convention. If you wanted to write your whole web app, do everything with posts, you probably could. But it's just, yeah, and you can do it. You definitely can do everything with gets. But, like, forms will be a little weird. But you can make forms work with that. Actually, you can do forms. They'll take it. The method, the submission type, and say it's a get as opposed to a post. A lot of understanding the web is very flexible primitives that are used typically in certain ways, but they don't have to be used in those ways.
Nobody
and that's very much the way Node is, too.
Nobody really knew what they were doing when they made it. They're like, this
wouldn't
be used like this.
But it's also because that enables evolution. Why define the syntax into it, the semantics into it, if you don't have to?
There was an example where you define an inline function and then it's
executed. Yes. So that was on the midterm. I'm trying to think of this one in here.
It was jQuery synchronizing the check mark to the display.
Yeah, exactly.
So it would be here.
I'm just trying to think of it as a place. Normally in a Node application, when you define a function, you don't call it immediately.
Just control F for.
But if you have.
Close brace, close paren, open paren. If you find that pattern.
Close brace, you're right, let's see. Let's just close paren. Close paren, then open paren.
You're fine.
Nah. Actually, I think that one is.
Yeah. Yeah, that is.
That's it right there.
How's that for fun?
Do you all see what I'm talking about here? This line right here? What's this doing?
Require connect Mongo returns a function.
So what this is doing here is it's requiring connect Mongo. So connect Mongo returns an object. And that object that it returns, we're going to assume it's a function. And we're going to call it. And we're going to call it and give it the option, an argument of express, which we defined above. And the return of that, we will assign to MongoStore.
Yeah.
This is why I was emphasizing the whole objects and functions being passed all over the place in weird ways at the beginning of the term, because you can't understand the code in detail unless you kind of get this pattern. They're just it's everywhere in like one line. You just look at it sideways and go, whoa, that's what that is. Now, you don't have to think about this most of the time, because a lot of times you're saying, I just copied this template, here it is, I just stuck it into my code and it just works. And that's fine. But you should be able to say, what is this really doing? Let me look at this for a second and pick it apart. Especially when you're trying to understand why does that work. Because it's not mysterious. It's actually a very simple execution model. I mean, this inclusion thing is just, you load in the file. There's, you know, rules about the file that gets loaded in. It returns an object. You assign the object here. Done. For other questions. Not that I want to hear from you, but other people? Questions? Only have a couple more minutes. I got about 15, 20.
Mine's actually about the assignment submission. Can I ask quick about that?
Sure.
What time are you expecting? Like, are you gonna cut us off right at midnight, or are we?
So the nature of GitHub is it's kind of hard to say you can't do any more commits.
You can revoke their access.
I could revoke their access, but I'm not going to revoke their access. But the fact is, I can always pull the code at a certain time, and you know, and I can also see when your commits are. I can disregard things. In practice, I'm not going to do that. Which means that you should have it in by midnight, because the next day I'm going to start looking at things that I do it. But and if you haven't done that, if you haven't asked for an extension, you shouldn't assume one. You want to live dangerously or something, I may have just graded your, you may see a grade pop up and you haven't, you've added code. But I'll know you have finals to study for and other things. So you should get this done as soon as possible.
That's a final.
Yeah, exactly. So, but if you need more time, tell me, and then I will make sure I won't grade your project until I see your notice. But my plan is to start grading, on Thursday.
Time you usually wake up in the morning.
The question is, what time do I go to bed?
And will that change if we get you drunk?
Yeah, yeah. Get it in by midnight. Yes. Get it in by midnight. I'm saying is that if you find yourself working at 1 a.m., you say, I have one last thing to finish, and let me check it in. You want to work till 1 a.m.? Fine. But I'm just saying that get it done that night.
105 tonight.
Okay. Yes.
Does the report have to be in Markdown?
Yes.
Yes.
It's a really easy.
I actually put in the MD. I said.
What if
GitHub wants
it
MD,
but it's just plain text?
Well, if it's just plain text, it's Markdown.
Yeah.
Yes.
Are you actually going to clone the projects onto your local disk? We're doing some funky things with submodules. So there's stuff missing from a repository that you need to clone for detection.
So if I run the clone, I will get it?
Well, if you run the code,
you have to get submodules in there.
Yeah, it's recursive submodules.
Okay.
So it's a little tactic that you play.
If you give directions,
you
then I'll be fine. I will probably read the readme first.
Probably.
Before going into anything else, because that's the easiest thing. I may just use the web. I probably do a lot with the web interface and only pull it if I'm going to run the code.
More for bugs.
Yeah. Okay. Yes.
We can get the formatting to work in one of the files, so it's Markdown, but it's got a little bit of inline HTML. If that's terrible, it renders fine on.
Part of the Markdown spec is that it allows inline HTML.
I know, I'm just wondering.
Yeah,
it reduces readability, but it renders great.
Renders where? Are you talking about the README file?
Yeah, like if you view it on GitHub, it looks great. If you actually look at the source of the Markdown, it's not as pretty.
I'll say if GitHub parses it, it'll probably
okay.
Fine. If I start looking at the source and start seeing cross-site scripting attacks, I will not be happy.
In the Markdown
file? In the Markdown file, so yes, I will not be happy about that.
But what if we're successful?
He'll be even better at a job.
What if that was actually our project?
Okay,
did we miss any obvious questions to ask you?
So, like, for example...
What is my team?
I could ask very simple things like, where does... When it says connection error, where does that get written to?
Console.
You know, that's kind of a stupid question, but surprisingly people will miss that. Okay, yes?
One of the things, what I was going to say earlier is, if anyone is confused about that require returning a function and then calling it, it's done there with Mongo store inline, and it's actually done with express and app out of line. So express equals require express, and then if you go down to where it defines app, app equals express.
That's true.
The same thing, just out of
yes,
line.
Yes, exactly. And in fact, actually, what you could do here is we could have said var app equals
no,
require...
No,
you can't?
Because of line lib.
Oh, that's true. If you didn't have that.
Oh, yeah.
But obviously, but if that was the only place you used express, you could do it there. But that's in general. Don't define a name unless you need the name somewhere else.
Readability.
Yeah, there's readability.
Okay.
Fine. But...
We don't want to. We're talking about performance optimizations when you're creating private stuff inside of constructors.
You don't understand the performance constraints. Oh, by the way, with things like JavaScript, you really don't understand what's going to be faster or not, because nobody does. The only way you know what's faster or not is by running the code. And it will vary from one runtime environment to the next.
Fantastic.
So,
yeah, doesn't your JavaScript code on the fly with equivalent stuff might be faster by doing the plus.
Modern compilers do all kinds of stuff that is truly magical. Especially just-in-time compilers. The transformations they do, you go like, what? You just figured out my loop is going to do no work, and so you eliminated it? It's really fun for it's really fun for benchmarking purposes or something. You'll put this loop that's supposed to take up a lot of time, the compiler looks at it and goes like, that doesn't do anything useful. Gets rid of it. It'll optimize away the tests.
It was actually, all compilers secretly have been written by Dumbledore. No one else writes a compiler.
So... Okay, here's a question. User find. So what arguments does this take?
Object
and that's where it ends right here. I think. Yeah, I think...
No.
The functions there, bcrypt syn salt, and this is all there. Ugh.
There we go.
Yep.
107.
Yeah, what?
No. No.
You think 107?
Yeah.
Yeah, bad indenting. The indenting will be correct on the final. I'll make sure that. But anyway, what I was looking here is that, so the arguments it takes, but it still doesn't change what the arguments are because it still ends with this.
It looks like close parens, semicolon is like an operator or something in JavaScript that you just do all over the place.
Just everywhere.
At least in Node. But again, what is that doing? It's closing the object, closing the argument list, and terminating the thing by the semicolon. Telling the statement, yeah. You will be, if you understand what the code is supposed to do, even if you don't know exactly how it does it, use that as a guide. Use that as a guide for trying to figure out what it's doing, you know, what the details are. Again, new user's object. So what does res send do? First of all, where is res defined?
Control F res.
No, but notice So this, notice this whole scoping rules of JavaScript. Res is a local variable defined up here. And notice we're defining a new function here. In the context of that function, it has access to that res. We're seeing closures at work here. So when I said, what is res send? So whenever, you know, this, remember for all these app posts, they take a function that takes a request, req res. This request is what came from the user's browser. This is the request. The res is the result, what we're sending back. Result, response. Okay, response. But it's really the
result. Documentation uses response.
Okay, but anyway, but it's what you're going to send back to the web browser. So, but this is an object. You basically use that to send stuff back. So when you call res send, you're saying the response you want to send back is this.
Is it just punted in plain text?
I think so. That one's in plain text. But like, for example, it's like this one, res, you know, res request next. This response, yeah, I'm looking for, yeah, the, yeah, I think actually that's what the routes are. Like for here, res render. So when you do res render, what's between res render and res, what did I just say there?
Send.
Render is a little bit of magic.
Render uses parsers that you have defined, like J, to take templates and instantiate them. If you're just using send, you're just sending text. So most of the time, if you want to send real pages back, you're going to be using this, render. Unless you're like accumulating your page piece by piece or something.
What does the send get back return use? Like render,
it's going back to the client raw. There's no weird view. You're not defining a view for it. There's no like weird thing. You're sending back text. So a node will send back a plain text response.
You can probably specify the mind type.
I think so, yeah.
In most of them, yeah.
But I think it defaults to text. So it's not to say you couldn't generate a page that way. Like, for example, if you had a plain file or a big string, you could just send it there. You could just, oh, my page I've already generated by some other way. I just want to send the string this way. But
most of the time.
Or like an image or something. The browser handles the results. So when we says res render, what rendering is happening on the client and what's happening on the server? Yes?
It's converting JSON to HTML and sending it.
Yeah, so the render on the server is JSON to HTML. On the client, it's HTML to picture, you know?
Pretty.
You know, pretty formatting fonts, whatever.
Link.
Yeah. You understand this code, you understand the basics of a web app. You don't understand this code, you've got some holes. If you have questions, let me know. Actually, before the last couple of minutes, we have a couple minutes. What do you want a study session? Do you want a quick review for you to ask questions like a day or two before the final? So the question is when?
Okay, wait.